Hey devs, you're tuning into the debug log number one. So today's show starts off with a little bit of good news and a little bit of bad. The bad news is Ryan received a job offer out on the West Coast, so he's no longer working in Georgia with us. The good news is Ryan received a job offer and is no longer in Georgia with us, which basically translates to more company snacks for the rest of us. No worries though, he's still on the podcast, so it's basically business as usual. Anyway, in this episode, we go over some of our favorite and not so favorite data storage solutions for Unity. We highlight key considerations that developers should keep in mind when picking a solution. We talk HIPAA and COPPA, whose acronyms will sorta be explained in the show, and things to consider concerning security. This episode is chock full of information, and we hope that you enjoy it. So, without further ado, this is the Debug Log Episode 1.
Wow. That was sexy. I think,
no, it was pretty on. It's always off. It always sounds off to everywhere, so I mean, I don't...
Yeah.
I think your counting messed me up, though.
You don't
it's
know.
It's like 3, 2...
Does it go on 1, or, you know?
Exactly.
It must have cut off, then.
Yeah, no, I heard you.
Yeah. Huh?
He said 1.
I said 1.
I heard 1.
1 was said.
1 is the number that was said.
You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Obino Opara.
I'm Zach Schneider.
And I'm Ryan Kilgore.
It's a weird gap.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is our episode. There's a reason for that gap. This is episode 1. We did one episode before this, which was a getting to know you episode, and we all talked about how we got started and everything. But since then, there's been some new developments with Ryan, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are new developments. I have since left the clan, unfortunately. I mean, it's a good and a bad thing. I miss everyone there, but I'm now on the West Coast with NCSoft making games in Unity there. So,
don't ever say you left the clan in Georgia.
Sorry. I started my West Coast branch, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Obina.
That was awkward.
And let's cut that part.
So that's cool. So now he'll be out there. We have a time difference. So now we're back to doing this all on Skype again. But
yeah,
I think it'll
yeah.
be good. Yeah, it'll have better audio quality. At least. So today's topic is for our first official episode. We thought we'd dive right in and hopefully we can help some of the people that are just starting out with Unity might be like, what? I don't even know how to do anything yet. But this is one of the topics that after I started getting into it after a few weeks, this is the first thing I wanted to know immediately. It's like, and the question is, it's really about how to save your data. And that would include anything from high score data to like a save game data to maybe if you did like a multiplayer server game where you'd have world objects and sync data. So there's a lot of different kinds of data, and we'll go into that. But first, we'll just start going through the different solutions, maybe starting off from the most like user-friendly to the most pain in the butt, I guess. So who wants to go?
Yeah, no, well, so, you know, as before you even get started with like the types and the different data, I guess, solutions you have, the question is, like, you have to first ask yourself, like, what am I saving? Like you said, am I saving the high score? Am I saving some multiplayer data? Because that's going to dictate, you know, what solution you use. So before you even get to that point, you know, you really have to step back and say, what am I saving? And then you can jump in and look at the solutions. But yeah, one of the first solutions, if say you were trying to save of you know, high score data. You know, one of the things I like to use in Unity, and it's built into Unity, is the player prefs. You need player prefs. And there's like a whole API for that. So you can save, you know, and they make it really easy to save, whether you're saving like an int or you're saving, you know, number data, string data, or whole objects. And they make it really easy for you to save that just with simple API calls to Unity. And again, that is built into Unity, so it makes it really easy.
Do you know what the capacity of that is?
I'm not sure.
You know, we should look this up before we start.
Yeah. I think it's. I want to say it's a few megs. It's not a huge space. You know, it's not like you're going to store like an MMO's amount of worth of data in there. But it's a fairly reasonable size data store. I mean,
it's meant for like kind of cache or scores or some kind of.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's only locally saved. Correct on that device.
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely, yeah, it's gonna be per. I guess would it be MAC address? I guess so per device, like you said. And another thing with that is, you know, if you had to, you have to think about like if you had multiple users for an application, how you would store that data. So since it's just one player prefs file per device, you have to figure out how you're gonna model your data in a way that it can store information for multiple accounts.
Yeah, so. Because it's basically just a key value store. So you'd say user equals Andrew, you know, mm-hmm. score equals 100. But if you come right. in and log in and say user equals Obina, it would totally erase everything that I did. So
one trick that I like to use is I like to use like a string for the key, and I'll preface it with an ID number, and then I use a substring to split that apart. So you can literally take that one key and you can get two pieces of information out of it and then save your value with it.
Look at him. Clever, Zach.
I know.
Ooh. Just as an aside, looked up the size real fast. Thank you, Internet. There's one player...
one to the Internet!
Yes, I've got this! There's one preference file per web player URL, and the file size is limited to 1 megabyte. So that says it's for the web player. I'm assuming that's maybe the same for the others,
like local applications. Yeah,
and that data, like that data is, I mean, for people just getting into this and not, that might seem like a low amount, but we're talking about this is text, and so if you think about like a blank document on your computer is like what 4K, right? And so that means you could have, I don't know, you know, like 250 of that. And usually when you're saving this data, it's like you said, it's a couple lines of text. So you're not even breaking up a 4K probably.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, actually, now that I'm reading this about the editor and standalone, I don't think there is a limit. Like, as I'm looking at this and it's talking about, you know, on Windows, it's going to go in the registry file. On like Windows Store apps, there's a player DAT file. In Linux, there's project settings. So I think maybe on standalone platforms, you have a little more room to grow there. Now, granted, that doesn't mean that's a great solution to, again, start putting MMOs amounts worth of data on that local store. That you may want to start thinking about other options at that point. But, you know.
It's definitely the great source right when you get started, because you don't have to think about where it's getting saved. You don't have to think about some kind of authentication keys and passwords and API codes. You just say, hey, I'm just going to dump stuff here. Wow. And even while you're just developing, you know, you might want to do stuff later on and like a server solution like we'll talk about in a minute. But at the beginning, it's fun just to hack around and just dump stuff in there.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, speaking of, you know, the difference, I guess a good transition from saving things and during development locally, I guess another solution that we have that we've used a lot where we work is a solution called Parse. It's a cloud storage service that's available pretty much for free as far as, you know, how much data they allow you to store.
Yeah, there used to be, when it first started a couple years ago, there was like it was an actual request limit. Like, you couldn't do more than, it was like 1 million requests for free. You're like, and now it's down, they do it by like a rate. So I believe it's 30 per second, which is nuts.
That's way more than anybody's going to really use, unless you're running a whole bunch of players.
Yeah. So, okay.
Continue,
I'll continue. So Parse, you know, allows you to say if you're during development and you're like, I want to store, you know, it's a quick and easy and dirty way to store information on a remote host. And the API that they provide, speaking of the APIs, they provide APIs for almost every language. You know, they have Ruby APIs, .NET APIs, Unity API, of course. They have mobile APIs as well, so you can actually interface with mobile apps really easily.
They were kind of solution that came along, like, because I used to develop some more apps, and they came along when, say, in the past, if you wanted to make an app, like an iOS app or Android app, and you said, hey, I want to sync some data or have, like user accounts and store different analytics there, you would have to have your own web server and create this whole big mess. And within iOS and Android, you would have to make web requests, and those libraries are not great. The REST calls and stuff, they're really clunky. And when I started using Parse from an app standpoint, because they had iOS, easy-to-use iOS libraries. And then by the time I started working with Obina, it was almost like the day that I met with Obina about the job, Parse came out with the Unity SDK, so it's like an easy call. So you don't have to go and touch any kind of web request or www library. It's an easy Parse library, and you do simple function calls to save your data, and it'll do cool stuff where it'll cache stuff if you're not actually connected, right?
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. And another fantastic thing about Parse is, you know, when you're viewing your data, like the player prefs, it's a lot more difficult to, you know, have to go to the file, open it up, and, you know, if it's text and not binary, you just look at it and say, you have to look through it that way. But through Parse, they give you like a relational tables that they set up viewable in this web application. So you can just go to the web app, log in, and then see your data as you're pulling and reading and writing to that database. So that's another fantastic thing that we have, that I like about Parse.
Yeah, a solution, like a kind of use case, is something that Zach or Ryan was working on before he left us.
Oh,
and now that's right.
And then Zach is working on now. A use case is to use, since you can log in and change that stuff remotely, they were working on a solution to edit like configuration data, right?
Right, so we were using a Parse table to populate an entire scene with NPCs, non-playable characters, so that once we load into the scene, we don't have to have all that scene data in there. We can load them in dynamically based on a session or lesson ID. But it was actually a little bit more difficult because we have to. We didn't want to pull so many times from Parse. We did not want to have as many queries. So Parse actually allows you to pull the entire, like, you basically query based on certain attributes of each of these objects. And then you can basically store that query inside a node, a Parse object node. And then you can keep that in memory instead of having to go back and keep querying Parse for more information.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so you basically have your snapshot. You know, it's not going to change over the session, you know. And that way it's in memory and you don't have to, like you said, keep making those requests.
Yeah, and Parse, it's a pretty good solution. Just when we started using it, first started using it, it was neat and slick, but it's also like any of these web stars. Because there were at the time a few competitors, and there still are, but that had similar services. They just didn't have a Unity SDK. But being where we work, it's like sometimes you're worried about the solutions just like crapping out on you or them going out of business, and you're like, well, I don't know, because we're gonna have to run, like, where we do stuff for research studies, they're gonna have to do this for like 5 years, and what happens if this dies and we have to build our own? But a couple months after we started using it, Parse got bought by Facebook, so I don't know if you have to worry about them going out of business.
Probably not. I don't know. That Facebook's got no future.
Although,
I think it's fly-by-night.
No, because I always had that joke about Facebook, because Facebook's essentially the same app most always. But they have, like, thousands of engineers. I'm like, what are they doing all the time there? Like, what? I mean, it's a web app. You know, it's a web app that people could build relatively easy. I mean, it's a big, complicated thing. But they have so many engineers. But I realized that when they bought Parse, they're like, oh, they just change the Parse interface every week. That's what they do.
They really do.
Oh, wow.
Because it's changed about 10 times. It's not a big deal. And sometimes it gets better. It does get better.
But every week you get an email about Parse changing something. But it's really cool. I mean, they have a great documentation. And I think that's something they recently changed, was how they display their... And, I think it's open source documentation too now, so, which is interesting.
And also things they have on that service is, we just talked about, they have the tables, and they're built on NoSQL non-relational, but they're basically relational tables that they give you access to. But they also have in their little suite of tools in that SDK, they have a analytics service, which is for mobile users, which they can, you know, you can track stuff like the app certain actual like installs of devices and when how many times they open the app and how long they're using the app. That just happens automatically.
Big Brother's watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also
that
have.
That's pretty nice, though.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And they do push notifications, which is really cool because that, if you've ever tried to do push notifications or set that up manually, don't do it. It's the worst because you have to like not only
don't
do you have to set up a whole server manually and do all this stuff, you have to you think it's hard attack trying to get the apps published, try to get like a app like server like qualified for push notifications from Apple. It's no, don't want to do that. So push notifications, use those.
Another tricky thing, or you know, tricky thing going from like player prefs to parse is you're going from dealing with something that's local to dealing with something that's remote and over the internet. So one of the tricky things that I had with using parse is, you know, getting callbacks from parse. And sometimes you have to, you know, when you're calling out for a query, like Zach said, to parse, you have to sometimes wait on functions. And they do have, like, the coroutines and the, what's the word I'm looking for? Asynchronous calls and stuff like that, that you can wait on and then pop it back, I guess, to, you know, to make sure you're getting the calls in the correct order. So that's the one thing, I guess, the caveat you need to keep in mind when you move to from local data stores to remote data stores. So I guess that's just the transition you have to make in the logical way of thinking for moving from local to remote. So
you're right. Serial or synchronous to asynchronous can be a huge pain in the butt.
Yeah, I saw your solution for that in the code, by the way.
Who, mine?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty good.
Thank you. What was it? I forgot. What did I do?
Expand on that point. Player prefs. I was trying to incorporate player prefs into a parse call. So basically, I was pulling information from parse and trying to save that in the player prefs just in case I lost internet connection. But setting the player prefs, so setting the values, can only be called from the main thread, so from something like update. And because the parse call is asynchronous, it's not in the main thread. So I could not set the values. So what Ryan did was he took basically an action queue. So a queue first in, first out. So, and we would put the calls for the new functions inside that action queue. And it would go down to update and say, okay, what's my first one in the queue? Pop that out and then run that action, so that it would actually be getting called from update.
That's fancy. Pretty good.
That is fancy.
That's actually a good solution for, and we'll get into this in another episode, but when you do UI stuff too, any UI calls like that, they always want, and I don't know, it might be like with the new UI, I don't know, but with previous UIs or even in Google, you need to call that stuff from the main thread, and they won't let you, so that would be a cool solution for that too.
Thanks for reminding me about that. Totally forgot I did that. I guess I was drinking at work that day. I don't know.
Every day, Ryan.
Yeah. That's my inspiration, the muse.
Cool. Well, if that's it for parse, there's another little level above parse, and this might not be applicable to some, but when you get there, it's a big pain. There's a lot of pains in the butts. This episode.
Yeah.
But yes. At where we work, they had a problem because most of this stuff is health data, which is personal health information, PHIs or whatever. So we had to start getting into the world of HIPAA compliance. And don't ask me what HIPAA stands for. It's like Health Information Privacy Act of America.
We didn't ask you, but you still told us anything.
Yeah. I just made
don't
up
ask
one.
Me,
I just
I'm
made
just
up
bullshit.
Okay.
Health, what, maybe Health Information Privacy Act of America? Is that, that sounds right? It's two A's. Anyways, so like parse, there's a service called, we started using, once we started getting into the HIPAA, we realized it was such a nightmare of setting up because it involves lawyers and all these kinds of audits, and because basically there's steps in place to protect data, personal health information data, from just some developer that works in place or somebody from hacking in or just from data being left around and being sent to the wrong person. So instead of rolling that ourselves, we found this service, which is almost identical to parse. In some ways, it's the same kind of thing. It's an API. It's a server. You send data up there. You can have users sign in. You do all that stuff, but it's totally HIPAA compliant. And that service is called Catalyze. And of all the ones we've seen, we saw another one called TrueVault, and there's a few of them. And a lot of times they're really expensive. We picked Catalyze, honestly, because it was the cheapest. And that might have been what we paid for that. Because it's about $100 a month, like just flat out per app. But a lot of the services for HIPAA compliance where you just have a server, they're all like $1,000 to $5,000 a month. And so, but Catalyze is basically, we don't have to talk long, it's basically Parse, but it's HIPAA compliant. And one of the stipulations that Ryan and I ran into with that is that nice kind of interface we talked about with Parse where you can log in and see all your data. Part of the HIPAA compliant act is that you can't see data. So when you log in, all you see is your table schema, but you can't see anything else.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's really inhibits just, you know, if like one of the applications I was working on before I left is, you know, like Zach was mentioning, there's a bunch of game data that's dynamically loaded, and so you have NPCs positioned throughout a scene, and that's driven by that remote data store. It catalyzes, you can't see where any of that is going to be. I mean, it's, you know, you can't just go in there and be like, I want to move that NPC a unit to the left. It's like, no, you can't see any of it. And so, like, if you just want to go, like, tweak data on the fly, it makes it very difficult.
Yeah, so I doubt, I mean, people just getting into game development might not be having had this problem, run across the HIPAA-compliant problem. But just know there are services. If you start to get into any kind of thing related to health information or even, like, maybe personal information with government apps or some kind of thing, you need to probably look into HIPAA for about an hour and then realize you need to look for a service. So Catalyze is the one we use. Right. And it's been, at first we thought it was bad. I think they're all about the same. They're all just the nature of the HIPAA compliance. The way that, like you said, the way those things work, that makes them hard. And so it's just, we won't talk of HIPAA ever again on the show.
Yeah. Well, actually, we will get the correct acronym, though. It's Health Insurance Portability and Accountability.
All right. Well, I like my health information protection or whatever that gets.
Yeah.
Happy
insight. Thanks for that, Ryan.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry.
Fact check, Ryan.
Yeah. Fact check it, Ryan.
That's not what I see here.
We got Rye Guy in the fact check copter.
Fact check. Oh, actually, you know, one more aside about that data, you know, like the HIPAA compliance in the data stores and trying to protect people. I used to work at Cartoon Network as well, so we also had COPA compliance, which is the Child Online Protection Act. So you could actually run into things there where, you know, you're maybe making just a children's game. It doesn't even have to do with healthcare, and you may have to worry about how your data is stored or what data is accessible, you know, to other players.
Right.
So that's just, you know, like Andrew mentioned, with the government, with healthcare, with children, you know, all those big sort of like, you know, sensitive touch points, you know.
And that's a good point. That's actually probably a better point than HIPAA is the COPA stuff, because people might be trying to start making, oh, I'm going to make a cool little kids app, and they can talk to each other and stuff. Like, oh, hold on.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do stuff like that. There's certain rules in place, so just make sure you're informed about those things before you jump into.
And not to go down a slippery slope, but it even goes into like, you know, hey, what can they say to each other? Is there free form text, or do you have to can your chat?
Right.
You know, blah 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 blah. So,
cool.
Interesting.
All right. Well, those, moving on from that, like those, the player prefs of Parse and the various solutions for like HIPAA and COPA, all that stuff. Those are the kind of prepackaged solutions, and I'm sure there's more now than Parse. Parse is just the one we use and prefer. I bet there's some that have, you know, the SDK by now, I bet. But moving out of that range, then you move out into the wilderness, and it becomes your DIY, like roll your own solution. And those can come in various forms, I guess.
Yeah, actually, you know, just to, I guess maybe to kind of a segue is, you know, we were using Parse for. The MMO app where we're talking about with all the NPCs and the configurations. So another method of data storage, which this application used, was you could actually switch between using Parse and actually writing to flat files. I mean, you know, say if you're just doing something that's going to be local, that's completely, you know, an avenue you could possibly take. So for instance, with this application, say you read in everything from the Parse data store in the Unity editor, you know, when you were testing your configurations, you could actually, you know, basically flip a switch and say, hey, I'm going to write this out now to just flat JSON files locally. So if you, by the way, I don't know if you guys knew this before I left, but if you ever just need to like dump all that to a flat file locally, you can totally suck all the Parse data into the editor and then dump it to a JSON file locally if you need be. So
just did it.
But Done. There you go.
Done.
But yeah, flat files, very simple, very old solution, but you know, they can work for you.
And flat files, by yeah. flat files, you mean, just to explain that, flat files are just any kind of text document. It's from JSON, which is JavaScript notation stuff, or just a text file. You could do a CSV file, which is, you know, comma separated value stuff. It was weird when I started, it was game programming that got me to understand basic like file management on like a operating system, because you start like saving out files and you got to add the extension. You're like, oh, you realize that the extension,
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, the extensions on files are just it's BS. Like, it's like I can just do dot Andrew and then make sure I save that file.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're just there for programs to recognize.
One of the cool things with the JSON files and parse. That I found out this week is you can actually store a whole text file as a string inside parse, inside one of the columns of the object. So when I pull an object, say my master configuration file, I pull the string from that file, and it's actually a big long string that you can then run through a JSON parser. And then you have an actual JSON file that you just pulled from parse.
So are you storing the actual file, or like a binary file, or just a string of
a string? Yeah,
it's and really just kind of a blob.
That's modifiable. So once I pull it from parse, I can modify it and then send it back to parse. So I actually, when I pull it from parse, if it doesn't exist in my current local memory, I'll write it to current local memory. If it does exist, then I do like a string compare and then overwrite the old one if it doesn't match. And that way, if I ever can't pull from parse, I have a local file in memory.
Ryan, you must have left Zach some super juice before you left.
I just stole his juju.
Seriously.
Steal it, yeah, man. Use it. Use it for good, though.
Use it for good.
And by, like, I don't know, I'm going to keep explaining things for people that are just getting into this, but people that have our experience might kill us, but when we say JSON, it's a certain kind of notation that for configuration files, like, so there used to be a thing called XML, and there still is. And there still is. It's just basically a script, like a tagging language that helps you kind of put it structured. It's a structured document that helps you do information files. So that's usually what's behind a lot of your like rich text or some of your programs you use. And JSON's a much lighter weight solution. It's kind of very similar to like the key value stuff we talked about with player preferences, but it's kind of just all stored basically just in a text file. And when you do that, so what Zach was saying is like he'd put that in a parse and he'd bring that into Unity and he'd use, I think we use still Simple JSON, right?
Simple JSON, yeah.
And I know there's one called JSON.net, which I don't have much familiarity with, but Simple JSON's always worked for me, and that's just a library that helps you do that parsing, which means it converts it into objects in C#.
Yeah, and you guys might also stumble across, I think I use Mini JSON in one of the projects.
I've heard of that before too.
Yeah, and it's much simpler than even Simple JSON, I think, because
that's
it just
not
basically
possible. It's called Simple JSON.
It's simpler.
False, sir.
False,
good
sir.
Good day, sir.
Good day. Wrong. You are wrong. Anyway, you may stumble across that. It basically just dumps it into like hash tables or array lists, and it doesn't even really deal with like sort of, you know,
the JSON node
of
stuff.
Dot
that's
this
cool.
And dot that, yeah.
Yeah, JSON node stuff is cool.
Maybe
easy.
Well, he's saying that it skips that and just makes it into arrays, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you may have an array list or
that's
a hash
cool.
table. Yeah, and it's just like, okay, well, which is a great way to sort of just make something generic. Say if you've got just some, if you want to swap out your interface on the back end between, say, like parse or catalyze or a flat file, you know, you could just maybe say pass a hash table across, and then you could use whatever, you know, functionality to convert it to JSON on the back end you want, and then you could pass it off to parse or catalyze or a flat file or something like that.
That's cool. I got to check that one out. I've never used that one. Mini JSON.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very simple, and you know, sometimes it can be a bit of a pain with typing, but it's all you really have to do is say like, oh, what type is that? Okay, I'll cast it to that. But
cool. And take a step back to when Zach was
Okay.
No. I'm just saying when Zach was talking about
hold up.
You know, storing that JSON data in a string. You know, parse also allows you to save files. There's like a file type, which is basically just a blob or, you know, blob
there
if
you
you're
go. Yeah.
From like the MySQL background or SQL Server or whatever. So you can save any binary data, whether it's like a document, video, music, or image file, or even like a JSON or .json file. So that's another way to, you know, pull JSON data if you wanted, or any other type of binary data.
Yeah, so you could start saving flat files locally, and then once you kind of got comfortable and got your system set up, you could transition to saving those to parse.
That's true. Yeah.
Also, this is like a whole advertisement for parse now. We don't even pay for it, so I mean, I don't even know how it's. But we kind of, I sort of touched on with the catalyze, but I don't think we mentioned the parse. We didn't mention the user management, did we?
No.
Oh no, we didn't.
That's the biggest
no.
thing that I mean. That was the first thing that attracted me to it. So it's like, say you have an app and you want to have accounts. So you're like, hey, they log in and they have points, or they have some kind of, I don't know. You'd have an ecosystem, maybe it's some kind of online MMOE kind of thing you want to do. And it's to do an account system and manage that, and it doesn't sound easy, actually. It sounds hard, and it is hard because it's just a pain because you got to do all the login stuff. You have to do all the, you know, forget password management. You have to do all the reset password management. There's a bunch of things like that. So what the first kind of thing that Parse provides is a whole user management system. So one of their types, like you can create any kind of table we talked about in their database, but one of the types that they actually, the first type they give you is like users. So that type is actually a thing that it'll have like a password field automatic and has some, I think it has some personal information.
Yeah, it does.
Automatic. Yeah. So you can kind of fill in like user information, like the email or the first name, last name, there's stuff like that. And like I said, the nice things it does is like it'll do all the, if they forget their password, it'll send them an email when there's a verification, like a one-step verification for that. There's like a, there's different kinds of things, but one real quick tip that I now remember was thinking about the user thing. You can't actually change the user table. So unless you're the user logged in. So a lot of times you can add tables or columns to a user thing or whatever you want to do. And that's kind of sometimes you're like, hey, let's just add a, like say you wanted to add just the high score simply to their user, their row. Mm-hmm. Unless you're logged in as them, and like usually you're not because you're like a web app or something else, you're the admin, you can't actually change their tables, so you have to do it some other way. So that's just this doesn't make any sense until you're going to run into that problem at some point, and then you're going to be like, I think you said something about that. But so Parse, go buy it. We get 10%. I don't know. We don't
enter
wait,
the
you're getting 10?
Yeah. Parse.com/. Also, this is another caveat with Parse. If you have an error with Parse, we talked about in the previous episode about how like Stack Overflow and Unity Answers, they're all the greatest in the world because you can just literally type in what your problem is and it'll come up. Parse is the worst name for a service because
that is so true.
Because this is a pro tip. This is Andrew's pro tip of the week. If you're searching for you're having a problem with the Parse service, you have to put parse.com in quotations, then the problem, or else it won't come up. Because Parse is the most general term in for all of programming.
I use like Parse Cloud Storage, and then I search after that.
I always just do .com. .com works, I think, too.
That's true.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Yeah.
This is the kind of insight you get on the debug log.
Yes.
It's a debug log. All right, I think that's a generalized thing. There's all sorts of other kind of DIY stuff that you can do. Like, you can roll your own database, which Parse is doing for you, but that's a bigger topic because that gets into also database management and what
they're talking about, like SQL solutions and things like that.
Yeah, because there's SQL solutions, there's no SQL solutions. Just to kind of summarize it, it just means that you kind of create your own Parse just using MySQL table or Postgres or whatever, Mongo, which Parse runs on. Parse is doing the work for you. I don't think you need to go down that.
You don't need to rebuild the rule. But, I mean, sometimes it comes in handy when you want to keep things slight or, I don't know.
And to get into that, there are people that just do that for a living. They're just DBAs and stuff, database data administrators. So, like, and there's sources and resources that have nothing to do with games that go way deep into those things. So I watched them. They're boring. So you go, we'll forward you to like lynda.com or something. You can look up some there, but that is a solution too. You can roll your own whole, you can make your own Parse if you'd like. But why? Make your own game. That's more fun.
Exactly. You could also go with the SQL solutions, you're still like, you've got to get a library that hooks up to your SQL database. It gets a connector that, you know, and you've got to create all these queries. Yeah, Parse is just easier. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, that becomes much easier because those are the kinds of things in game development you never think about, because I think you always have like an actual kind of tendency as a programmer to go, there's like kind of a sickness where you're like, I'm going to build my own.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you're like, because there's the part of every programmer, it's like you got into it because you're like, I could just build my own Facebook or like whatever it is.
I can
like,
make it better.
I can make my own video encoder. This one's bullshit. Like, I want to make my own. Yeah. So, but don't do that. You end up doing that. No. The guys from Unity, which this podcast is kind of based around, they were trying to make games, and they started making an engine to make those games, and they stopped making games because you can either make your own engine or you can make games. So you might want to make an engine. That's fine. Unity 2 or whatever. But like, but just know that it's more trouble than it's worth.
Well, yeah.
Anyway,
honestly, that would be a great topic for another show. I feel like is like the whole like, you know, when do you decide to roll your own versus you know, using off the shelf solutions, or maybe at least a subtopic, because I've run in that before. And
I think
like,
that's
places,
a good topic.
Yeah, that's a great topic.
Because we could talk about some use cases of that, and because it's kind of like part tech and it's part psychological, or maybe mostly
absolutely,
psychological.
Yeah. Oh, I had a boss that, man, he was like, roll your own everything. I'm so awesome. And I was just like, Jesus, man, we don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Well, that's data storage, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. You want to put my data where? So,
put it in the data hole.
So against that catchphrase.
I don't know if we did. I edit this, so I can call it if I want to.
I win.
Yeah. He's going to make us say it in the edit.
Yeah. So,
in post.
Yeah. So, before
we
leave,
in the data pool.
We have to do our special time of the week.
Oh, the game of the week.
Yeah. Don't try to subvert it, Amina. Game of the week.
You got to go high.
I tried to subvert it.
If you're listening to this, eventually, it's not going to happen before this first episode, but we will have a very professional bumper music right there.
There we go.
And Abina's going to roll his eyes every time it runs. So,
yeah. Yeah, right.
So the game
that
of the week this
audible.
Week is an old game. Not an old game. It's been a year and a half. 2 years? Year and a half. It's a game
it's
we actually
bit,
saw at Unite last year at the Unity Conference because it won the best Unity game of 2014.
It's also the game that Ryan loses constantly on when I'm ever
That's because you're watching me. That's because you watch me. Your judging eyes make me lose. I have no confidence.
So what's that game, Ryan? Why don't you explain it?
Okay, well, the game's Hearthstone, and
is it Hearthstone? People say Hearthstone or Hearth. I say Hearthstone. There's a big debate.
Whoever's saying Hearthstone has a speech impediment.
Hearthstone.
Hearthstone.
I'll tell that to my mother. Okay, thank you.
Oh yeah, well, you know, you can go down to Southern Georgia and tell her that. No, but it's a collecting electronic collector's card game from
CCG.
Blizzard CCG. Yeah, so it's a lot like Magic: The Gathering, where you build a deck and you play against other people. There's different classes based off the Warcraft universe. So you've got like your hunters, your mages, your warlocks, and they all have certain sets of cards sort of tailored to them. And so you build a deck and you can fight against other people online and earn gold, go through quests, buy decks. They have a lot of single player campaigns as well, which pretty interesting because they actually map the single player campaigns to dungeon raids from World of Warcraft. So say if you went through Naxxramas in a World of Warcraft, they have an actual single player campaign for you in Hearthstone to play through that as well.
Like synced up with your account?
No, not synced up with the account. It just has the spirit of that campaign. Like you'll fight some of the same bosses. They'll have some similar mechanics, as far as like, maybe this one boss spawns a lot of little minions and you have to maybe deal with a volume of people, or maybe another boss has just a high amount of hit points. They're just different little scenarios that kind of map back to their bigger Warcraft universe. But it's a very slick game, a very well done game. I still play it every day. Bina watches.
Yeah. I've never played any CCG before. Like, I've tried, like, probably when I was in middle school and high school, that's when Magic was all that. What is it, like, their mid-90s, right?
Yeah.
And I just wasn't that into it. I was like, I got a Sega, Super Nintendo.
You're too busy playing Pokemon decks.
Yeah. Too busy.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Too busy.
He said Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
Yu-Gi-Oh! But I've never touched one of those games before, so I was like, well, this is cool. And I think I've even tried, because I think on Steam, like, Magic the Gathering became free, and I was like, because they come out with a different version every year, and I was like, oh, let me try this. And I was like, whew, this is too much. I was like, this is, their electronic version is not that great, or maybe it's just not that centered
it's
towards
more
beginners,
complex.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, cool, but Blizzard, everything. I mean, I love StarCraft. I love Diablo. I've never really gotten to WoW that much, but so I was like, Blizzard, you know, they put a polish in everything, and it came out, and I really got into it because they really do guide you through the learning process from the beginning and teach you how to play one of those. And I was completely blown away, and I actually got really hooked on it for a while. I came back and I was trying to get Obina into it for a long time. It's just me and him working together in the room, and he didn't care.
So yeah, I put my headphones on. I was like, I don't want
just,
it.
Shut up, nerd.
Yeah. He says, shut up, nerd. Then he's like, I'm going back to my mud. I'm going to slay a dragon with text.
And so, but it's a cool game. And I kind of fell off of it for a while. And I've started getting, now that the iPhone version just came out a month ago, I've actually started playing it. And actually, the first couple matches I won right out. And I didn't even, with my old deck, I'm like, all right, well, I guess I can play this again. So,
how much is this game?
It's free.
Free.
Yeah, just wanted it to be known.
It's like crack. It's free, but then when you start getting a taste for it, they start, you know, you want to pay more.
Because the thing, you collect cards, so it's like,
yeah,
you have basic cards that are normal, but then there's like specialty cards, right? So then you can build your own custom deck. So when you play, there's different modes now. It's too much to get into probably, but they have, you can get into like an arena mode and you can win card packs and stuff. And so, or you can buy card packs with points, and so it's almost like a slot machine, basically. So then they open up like five cards for you, and it's like, oh, cool, I got a rare card for this person. And so,
right, those rarities map again back to the Warcraft universe. And you're right, it's like a slot machine. It's like, am I going to get a rare? Am I going to get an epic? Am I going to get a legendary? Because the minute you get one of those legendaries, it's like you just got your heroin fix, and you're off to the races again.
$100 more of credits, please. Yeah.
Hey, I've spent over $100 in that game.
I've spent about $10, I think, in that game. But I only just started. Do other like Magic or other CCG games have those character classes? Is this a unique to Hearthstone?
Well, no, they do have a unique take on it because those map back to, again, the character classes in Warcraft. So, you know, like Magic, if you've ever played that, there's five different disciplines. There's like, you know, white, red, blue, green, black, and you can mix and match all those together if you want. So that's one thing about Magic is, you know, you can kind of just mix things up however you want, and the rules are more complex in Magic. But what Hearthstone does that's great is it kind of, you know, simplifies it for people. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, oh, how can I mix and match things? You have one hero type, say like a hunter, and you have cards specific to them, and then common cards. So you can sort of build a deck around a hunter. And, you know, they've also just simplified the rule set. There's a lot of things in Magic that just get really complex, like, you know, instance interrupts, you know, things of that nature, where Hearthstone just does away with them and, you know, has a very regimented process for resourcing incrementation as well. So, I mean, there's just a lot of things they do well to bring it to a broader audience than Magic. Magic's great. I still like playing that, but Hearthstone's just good for a quick get-in-there game. You know, 15 minutes, you're good, and it's not that complex. And I think it just appeals to a broader audience.
And it's made in Unity.
Absolutely.
That was one of my questions of why Blizzard, like, who makes their own engines for everything, would make a game in Unity. Like, now that Unity's, like, we like Unity, but it's like you have a billion engineers, you can make your own. But apparently this project was such a side project where I think for like a couple of years I read a big Polygon article about it that there's the one game designer was the only person on the team, and he was making paper prototypes of the game.
And yeah, I think
after a while, and then I think they just started adding, like, oh, you can have a couple developers, here you go. And they're like, we can't make an engine, we need to use something else, and they turned to Unity.
I want to say, maybe even, like you were saying with that first designer, he may have even done that in Flash first. I'm not positive about that, but when they started to get serious, they needed something like Unity. They swapped over to that and said, okay, we get more engineers, we need more effects, we need better, you know, just... We just need a better system to create the game than Flash. Sorry, Flash.
And it's a big deal. I mean,
sorry, but it's, not sorry.
Yeah, it might be the...
Yeah, exactly.
It might be the biggest developer that uses Unity to date, really. Like, I mean, just revenue. Yeah. Like, think of one bigger. I mean,
I can't.
But I was blown away. I was like, whoa, really? And, of course, they won. So it felt like they were kind of cheating when they won the Unity Award last year. It's like, of course. I mean, come on. You beat all those indie
we're
games.
We're Blizzard. Come on, let's do this. Yeah.
Heroin always wins. That's the motto of today's podcast. Don't do drugs, kids. Or
much.
Maybe do. I don't know.
Yeah. Try everything once, but...
All right. Well, I think that's it for episode one. That's good.
That was good.
Informative.
Yes.
All right, so you look out at your sunshine still shining out there in California. Right.
Oh yeah, it's wonderful. It's been it's been 50 to 70 degrees every day.
Shut
here.
Up.
I don't know.
It's been so hot in Atlanta.
It's been ridiculous.
It's been like 96 degrees every day and humid.
Holy shit!
I'm so sorry.
It's like, oh guys, I'm gonna go walk on the beach later. It's really great. I don't know about you.
Sorry, I gotta get an In-N-Out burger and like just hang out in the sunshine.
Shut
By
up.
The way, those are not as good as I thought they would be.
You heard
just
it here.
FYI.
I've never had an In-N-Out burger.
It's not bad. I mean, you know, you can go to Five Guys or like Shake Shack, and it's just as good. Actually, they're better. I think Five Guys is better. There, enough said.
You can send all those emails to Kilgore at thedebugblog.com.
All hate mail and anthrax envelopes can come to this.
So yeah. So anyways, that's our first topic. We're gonna. I think did we decide this is all? Maybe this is an offline conversation. Are we gonna do these every couple of weeks or every week? What are we gonna do? I think every couple of weeks at first, and then we'll see how it goes. But
I'm down for every couple of weeks.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah, that's good.
So in the meantime, you can reach us at thedebuglog@gmail.com, and there you can send us any questions, any comments, no criticisms, only positive comments, any ideas for future topics or like stuff you want to hear about or guests, or if you want to be on the show, we can talk to you. We have a site, it's thedebuglog.com, which has nothing on it right now, but we're going to start having these episodes on there, and we're going to start trying to do some tutorials and probably start a YouTube channel and start doing some quick little video tutorials, which would be really cool. And then we have a Facebook page, which is digital. It's facebook.com/thedebuglog. So,
well, hey, side note on the different ways we're sort of pimping ourselves.
Pimping
ourselves. Twitch actually has a game dev channel, so maybe another opportunity there. Just throwing
a game dev channel. What do you mean?
Well, on Twitch, I don't use it that often, but somebody showed me today after I was mentioning the podcast we're doing tonight. They're like, oh, hey, buddy of mine, or like, they have a game dev channel, so we could stream either video or maybe just static images and audio. You know, I don't know how we want to do
show
it.
Or,
but,
yeah.
New friends.
Yeah, over Twitch. Yeah.
Even YouTube on E3 announced that they were going to do that little game.
Yeah, they have
YouTube.com.
YouTube
so.
Gaming
oh,
thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, that's cool, though. That's actually a thing. We've talked about doing stuff like that, like coding challenges or stuff in the future. We might start streaming the show, the video of this, or do a Google Hangout as we record this in the future live.
Oh, that'd be rad, yeah.
I'll start a Twitch account for us too.
For
I haven't done that yet.
California.
Cool.
All right. This is a lot of offline conversation.
This is what the people love.
Yeah, whatever.
This is casual. Yeah, yeah. It's off the
exactly.
cuff. Relaxing, unbutton our tie or your coat.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
I don't get to see you guys daily anymore. Yeah. I need to do this. So.
Whose fault is that?
Hey, Obina, guess what? They're hiring.
On the record.
yeah, that sucks.
All right,
Andrew,
well,
cut that bit.
My interview on Thursday. So,
while Obina's still in Atlanta, until next time. My name's Andrew.
I'm Obina.
I'm Zach.
I'm Ryan.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
On debugging.
Yeah.
That is not a thing.
Yeah, keep on debugging.
Keep on debugging.
Keep on logging, then debug.
Stick your data away.
Burn, burn.
Alright, man.
That was a good episode!
Yes, you may stop recording.
Okay.